Jackson. It's 76 here. It's 85 where Bill Flores is. Where are you?
I'm actually in Riga, Latvia. So for those of you that are studying your map right now, go to Finland, swim across the Baltic Sea to the east, and we're right there.
Wow. Okay. So and you
then
are
ask for directions to the U.S. Embassy. I'm in the U.S. Embassy.
Okay, that's where you are. Okay, you'll be there at least for a little while. So Latvia really is on the western edge of what is Asia, and you've been over there. Tell us a little bit about where you've been since you left D.C.
Well, we left D.C. and we went to Belgium, and we spent a lot of time with our NATO counterparts and the EU counterparts to talk about, as well as our U.S. military men and women, to talk about the problems created by a resurgent Russia, and particularly the activities they're engaged with the Ukraine, and the instability and discomfort that's caused throughout the NATO countries. From there, we went to Poland. We were in Poland yesterday, actually in Warsaw, and we visited with the Polish people about what they looking for in terms of U.S. support and protection. Today we're in Latvia, and tomorrow we'll be in Estonia.
I'd kind of like to get your thoughts about Poland, because it's really interesting. Obviously, this is a country that's risen from the ashes, part of the EU, and yet at the same time, they have either a very bright or a very treacherous future ahead of them. What's your view of Poland after being there?
Well, it's remarkable. If you look at what was left of Poland following World War II, between the Nazis and the Russians, the country was just about wiped out, particularly Warsaw. There was nothing left of Warsaw after the 1944 uprising. And it has come back. It's the strongest growing economy in the EU today in terms of rate of growth, very entrepreneurial people. They are spending appropriately to defend their country and to be a good NATO partner and be a good member of the EU. One of the asides is they can't understand why Greek has been a bunch of slackers.
Mm-hmm.
It's really remarkable to see where they've come. And all these Eastern European countries that used to be part of the former Soviet Union have really made a great transition to capitalism, some better than others. The Polish set the gold standard in terms of the transition. But it's remarkable to see how they broke away from the Soviet system and they're thriving.
Well, I think we remember Lech Walesa and the shipyard demonstrations and riots. It's true. It's amazing how they have risen. I didn't know they had the fastest growing economy in the EU. That's kind of a pretty good poster child for give people an opportunity and see what happens. So why did you choose to be in Latvia? What is it specifically there that ends up being a reason for you to be there?
Well, it's a former Soviet satellite, and they are now part of the EU, and they're also part of NATO. And so their countries, like Estonia and Poland, that were similarly situated under the former Soviet Union, who are concerned about the resurgence of Russia. And so if you look at what the Russians have done in Ukraine and by seizing Crimea, what they did to Georgia a few years ago, the folks around here are trying to make sure that NATO is going to be there to support them, and also the United States. And so we're here to find out how the European Reassurance Initiative is going, which is something we started 2 years ago after the Russians invaded the Ukraine, and to try to make sure that we're resourcing this correctly and that we've got the right leadership involved, and to see how it's going, because this is critically important to the United States security at the end of the day.
Bill Flores joining us from Latvia. You move on then to Israel. Tell us what you expect to hear and see and who you'll be able to talk to there.
Right. We'll be in Estonia tomorrow and Saturday and then on to Israel. I'm not sure what we'll hear in Estonia, but I'll let you know next week.
All right.
In Israel, I expect that we'll get an earful about what they think about the deal that President Obama is trying to make with Iran. And so we'll hear not only from political leaders like Netanyahu, we'll hear from military leaders, and I think we'll hear from everyday folks on the streets and the different communities we're going to visit. So I think it'll be great to be able to bring that news home and make sure that our constituents and our congressional colleagues know what the folks think that are in that set of zip codes.
Netanyahu spoke to 10,000 American Israelis online yesterday, obviously, talking about how this actually was a pathway to a nuclear bomb for Iran. I know you must be keeping score as to how it looks in D.C. since everybody's going to be out for a little while, but what are you hearing the headcount is on the nuclear deal right now?
Well, in terms of conservatives and Republicans, I think we're almost uniformly against it. We believe that the president has actually done what Netanyahu said. That's given them pathway to a bomb. In addition, there are weaknesses in the agreement because it actually allows the Iranians to acquire ICBM technology. So that would give them a launch vehicle for a nuclear weapon. So I think those are clearly bad policies. On the Democratic side, Steve Israel, who is a noteworthy Democrat, came out against the deal today. Chuck Schumer, I think, is still keeping his options open, so that's good. He's a noteworthy voice on the Democratic side. And we've had a couple of other Democrats that people pay attention to that have come out against it publicly. So we just need to make sure that we go back and talk about what this really does to world security and to our friends in Israel. And it's not a good picture. I think I told you on a show a couple of weeks ago, I've read the deal, and it's ugly.
Yeah, you have, and that's we'll certainly watch that with interest. And obviously, members of Congress are going to be out in front of their constituents, and that's going to be something they'll be able to at least hear what Main Street America wants when it comes to that. Let's talk for a minute about the EPA, because Monday the president came out with his new standards for the EPA. Obviously, there's a lot of energy that's generated in Texas, and therefore there's a lot of concern about what gets pumped into the atmosphere. As a congressman from Texas, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, one of the things that we found out that just deeply troubling is that the president basically turned to environmental groups to write the regs. And so if you think about your typical environmental group, they have no business experience, and so they have no way to know what the impact is going to be on hardworking American families when they write their regulations. And so it's going to be devastating to families and to family incomes. It's going to hit those at the lowest level of income distribution the hardest, because their energy costs are going to go up, their cost of living is going to go up, and it's you know, they talk about social justice and income inequality all the time, and then they pass these policies that are hardest on the low-income Americans that are working the hardest to try to get ahead. I don't get it.
Now, one of the things that at least they are saying is, and obviously there'll be court battles on this, one of the things they're saying is at least they're giving the states some time to put these standards in place. It's not like an overnight deal. What's your thought there?
I think it's total horse poop, because here's the issue. Just because the standards go into effect in 20, you know, they've given a couple of extra years, the companies have got to start spending money today to try to find the technology that doesn't even exist yet. And to start making bets on what their generating portfolio is going to look like, their electricity generating portfolio is going to look like, just in 7 short years, and that is a very short time frame for a company in the real world. And so, when you're a bureaucrat, throw out these things and talk about how, you know, gracious you've been to folks in the real world, but if you're in the boardroom of the electric company that's trying to provide power to a rapidly growing Texas, you're freaked out because the technology doesn't exist, and there's no way you can produce power to meet the standards that they're trying to shove down Texans' throats.
Well, I'll ask you this again so you can answer it again, because we've talked about it. This is just the latest in a situation where the government continues through edict to change policy without going through the legislative branch. What kind of a recourse does the legislative branch have at this point?
Well, it's limited. We passed the RAINS Act a couple of weeks ago, and that would turn the regulatory scheme around and make it accountable to Congress, but that's not going to pass the Senate, and the president would surely veto it. The American people are going to have to make a choice in terms of what they want for leadership for an economic future, but they're not. You know, that choice is not going to come until November of next year.
Yep, the people are impatient. I don't think there's any doubt. Everything moves faster in our world, it seems, except for politics. Bill Flores joins us almost any place in the world on Wednesdays, and you can hear our entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. Safe travels to you as you continue out there.
Okay, good talking to you. I look forward to calling you from Israel next week.
All right, thanks a lot.